as most of you are probably well aware, the Colorado potato beetle is a major pest of potatoes throughout its range, not only here in North America, but it's also a problem in Europe and as far as China, mainly due to its ability to develop resistance to all the insecticide classes that we've thrown against it. That list is now well over 40 different compounds or insecticides. In 1995, imidacloprid became commercially available, and by 1997, there was already resistance developed on Long Island, which has since spread across the northeastern United States. It was first detected in Michigan in 2004. 2002, thimethoxam became available, and already by the next year, resistance was detected in Massachusetts and New York. Just to give a kind of a scale of how predominant the neonicotinoids have been for Colorado potato beetle control, the data in 2005 for the acreage ranging from Maine to Michigan or Minnesota, anywhere from 65 to 91% of the acreage was protected by neonicotinoids. And that equaled 50% or more of the acreage nationally. So you can see where this heavy reliance can lead to insecticide resistance problems. So our objectives are twofold. One, to monitor the resistance to imidacloprid and thimethoxam on a national, regional, and local scale, and then to compare and look at a cross resistance between imidacloprid and thimethoxam. To do this, we need a lot of beetles from a lot of sites. Cooperators send us populations from fields they think they have problems. We get them, we process them, and then we do topical bioassays by putting a little 1 microliter of acetone insecticide solution droplet to the third or fourth abdominal sternae, and then setting them aside in petri dishes and waiting 7 days before we assess the results. The reason we do this is there's initial knockdown, but then they can recover. So over 2, 3, even 6 or 7 days, they'll flip back over and walk around like nothing happened as they've been excreting this parent compound. Day 7, we assess 3 categories. We classify them as walking, normal, healthy individuals. Poisoned, as you can see in this picture, a beetle on its back, legs extended, maybe abdomen shrunken a little, or even a little bit of a, you know, excrement sticking off there at the abdomen where they've been excreting compound. And even if they're upright, they can't walk forward in a coordinated manner. They're stilted and so on. And then obviously there's a dead category. Poison and dead beetles were lumped into an affected category and run through log probate analysis in SAS. So there'll be a series of data slides that look very similar, and I'll walk you through kind of the patterns, and then we'll just walk through the rest of them, and you can look at just the general spread of the resistance. Blue bars are beetles that were collected as overwintered adults. They spent the winter in diapause in the soil, collected in the spring, and then tested. Orange bars are summer adults, so they spent the first generation as larvae in the field, went into the soil to pupate, came back out in July or August as summer adults. Bars with hash marks are significantly greater LD50s compared to our susceptible comparison strain, and that's a lab strain that's kind of kept without any insecticide contact or exposure. That 10X susceptible line, the black line you see, is 10 times the LD50 for that susceptible population. That's kind of our baseline for what we call resistant population. Anything with a higher LD50 than that, we say, is showing resistance. So this is the picture from 2006, imidacloprid on a national scale. See a lot of populations in the Northeast, or most of them with high levels of resistance. Michigan had resistance that was first detected in 2004. And then as you continue west, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Washington are all well below tenfold. This year, we see a similar pattern, although we had less coverage in the Northeast. But those two blue bars you see from Maine are from a site where neonicotinoid use has been out of the system for 4 seasons now. So without using neonicotinoids for 4 full seasons, we still have elevated LD50s there at that site. Michigan, again, high levels of resistance, 41 sites sampled. And then Wisconsin, for the first time, shows high levels of resistance at some sites. And that's mainly due to Dr. Groves' research there. He's had a real good cooperation and a collaborative effort with growers in the state of Wisconsin. This isn't something that happened overnight and it was new since last year, but he had some non-random sampling, I should say, where the farmers took him to sites where they think they've had problems or have had a hard time controlling their beetles. And with this more intensive surveying, we're able to see the pictures fairly similar in Wisconsin. Then Minnesota and Idaho are where they've been in the recent years. For Michigan last year, just for a comparison, I just want you to notice that there's a few populations above that 1.0 LD50, and then that white bar is the average LD50 from that home farm where we first detected resistance. To the left is to the south of that home farm, to the right, the north of that home farm. You see there's there's a little bit popping up here and there, but you know, not a lot of populations above that tenfold line. Well, this year, the overall LD50 seems suppressed compared to last year. Not many, only one reached that 1.0 level, but the number that are at or above the tenfold line has increased, and all the bars but one have those hash marks, meaning they're all but one significantly greater in LD50 values than our susceptible comparisons. So there's a lot of change going on. Seems to be a homogeneity taking place where populations that were lower are climbing, but the other ones have kind of settled in right now. So this is going to be an interesting thing to follow over the next few years. Here's the Wisconsin data. Very similar pattern. Numerous populations at or above tenfold resistance. Most of them are significantly greater than the susceptible. The 2006 thymothoxam picture, you have at least one population in the Northeast with high levels of resistance. Michigan did break the tenfold line that year, and the rest are relatively low. And we typically see much lower LD50 values for thymothoxam compared to imidacloprid. This year, similar pattern. Northeast had one over tenfold, and the rest were down where we've seen them in recent years. Michigan last year, we had the one that was that, and that was that eclipsed the tenfold line, and that's encompassed in that average bar, that white bar from the home farm. Everyone else away from that home farm was well below the tenfold line. Not a lot of significance there. This year, we see everybody suppressed below that tenfold line, but almost all the bars again are showing significance from our susceptible. So there's some change taking place in these Michigan populations that over the next year or two will be very interesting to follow. Cross resistance, you see on the bottom, the x-axis, imidacloprid LD50s plotted against the thymothoxam LD50s on the y-axis. You see a very strong correlation between the two compounds. This correlation is not a 1-to-1 ratio. It's in this case more like a 6-to-7-to-1 ratio. But this is similar to what we've been seeing in recent years. We've consistently seen a strong correlation between these two compounds. So to summarize, resistance problems continue in the eastern United States. It's continuing its presence and spreading in the Michigan's growing region. And now it's been detected in Wisconsin. The cross resistance, what does that really mean? Clearly there's a correlation between the two compounds, but this 6-to-1, 7-to-1 ratio is not what some people might have expected years ago in terms of a 1-to-1 ratio. But in the last 3 to 5 years, we've been seeing more 10-to-1, 11-to-1 ratio. So this year that ratio has kind of come closer, and whether that means we're going to start seeing this ratio approach 1-to-1 over the next few years, I'm not sure, but this is the tightest we've seen this ratio in the recent years. And it could be that this increased exposure or newer or more longer exposure to imidacloprid led to this, or there's slightly different resistance mechanisms why imidacloprid responds a little bit differently than thymothoxam. So in conclusion, resistance problems continue to increase. Obviously the best resistance management practices are to approach these things before resistance is detected. If you can encourage crop rotation, alternation of insecticide classes, certainly will help the situation. But once we have these resistant populations, these populations above tenfold or even 20-fold, it doesn't mean they can't be controlled. You see a shortening of control for the compounds in the field, but with more intensive or more, in some cases, costly management practices, they can still be controlled to a level where the grower can get some economic value out of the crop. In the home farm in Michigan where the problems first arose, they've gone to trap cropping at sites where they've had problems the year before to bring in a bunch of these beetles early in the season and wipe them out with products like Agrimac. And I think these techniques have been fairly successful for them. So with that, I'd just like to thank these cooperators, and then I'm open to any questions. Cool. Yes. Yeah.
It seems to be a wider window for application and more commercial pressure. So it seems that if the problems are going to grow rather than being managed. What do you think about
that? That's one concern we do have with the number of generics that are available now and the price coming way down. That is one concern. education is probably our best bet. You know, at least in Michigan, I really feel we have a really strong potato commission, a really educated group where I don't see a lot of use drifting to those generics yet. I mean, I could be a little bit off there. But it's a problem that is going to be hard to control if the price drives that kind of use. And I don't know what the efficacy of those generics is going to be, if the farmers are going to be really, the bigger growers at least, willing to make that risk. So I don't know how to answer that fully, but it could be a big issue. Yes? I'm not sure what exactly the value is for field failure, but it's certainly not the 10-fold or the 20-fold level. I mean, Galen, you might have a better answer for that. In Michigan, we haven't seen field failures outright, and we've seen populations as much as 20 or 25-fold resistant. But it's certainly a clear indicator that, you know, as they get close to that 10-fold line or above, that if there's nothing else is done, you have a significant shortening in the control. But I don't know if that answers. Go ahead, Galen. That's right. His comment. Oh, sure. I was just to say his comment was, you know, identifying a level where you get the growers to take some action before you get to that level, I think is what Galen was saying, is very important. I think we don't have a lot. We haven't done any field experiments. We did a little bit, but nothing that really results in a lot of actions. But I think certainly our data is lab assays. And so these are kind of worst-case scenarios. In the field, I think it would be much more pronounced effect in terms of mortality because they're falling to the ground. They're in the furrow. The irrigation system floods them out. They bake in the sun. So I imagine mortality factors are higher in the field. We do know carabids, for example, will feed on poison beetles. We did some little lab tests, and one year I had carabids feed on a poison beetle and then show signs of intoxication, just like the Colorado potato beetles. But then when we repeated that, we didn't have the same success. So, but there are definitely factors in the field that add to that mortality curve that we don't have in the lab. So I think that probably leads to exactly that situation. Galen. I think that's very possible, absolutely. But it's interesting that ratio has fluctuated a little bit, and it's coming, it's lowered. It's half, this year it was half what we've seen in previous years. And I don't know if that has to do with the resistance levels coming up, and they're going to come closer, but certainly the activity of thymethoxam would explain some of that difference. Keep going? Yeah. Well, there are other neonicotinoids being used, and we've looked at some of them, and I know Galen's worked at some of them as well. Acetamiprid, dinotefuran is out there. I don't think it's labeled quite yet, or it might be. They're working on more dinotefuran labels right now for Michigan, but they either fall close to the thymethoxam range or the imidacloprid range, but they all show the very similar cross-resistance patterns to each other so far. All right, thank you.